The next case is 06-1703 and 2183, John H. Hutchings versus David A. Childress. Mr. Elliott.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. My name is Rex Elliott, and I stand here both honored and privileged today before this honorable court to argue on behalf of the appellants, John and Nancy Hutchings. And if I may, Mr. Chief Justice, I would like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. The question before this court today is whether spouses can recover the income lost due to one spouse caring for another spouse that has been injured due to the negligence of another, or whether those spouses are limited to the cost to hire outside in-home health care. This question is before this court on a certified conflict involving the Fifth District Court of Appeals decision in this case, holding that such income loss was not recoverable, and the Second District Court of Appeals decision in the case of DePauw versus Bichette, which held that such income loss, in fact, was recoverable. Now, at stake here is a rule of law that would preserve a longstanding and fundamental principle of Ohio law and would also promote the importance of the family and the marital relationship in particular. We are asking this court to follow the very sound rationale of the Second District Court of Appeals in DePauw versus Bichette for the following reasons. It is difficult to imagine a more fundamental legal principle in the state of Ohio than the principle that ensures that injured victims will be made whole for the injuries that they've suffered at the hands of the negligence of somebody else. This principle, obviously, is designed to restore the injured victim to the position they would have been in had the negligence not occurred. This principle is so basic that it is in the restatement of law of torts, and it is a principle that this honorable court has repeatedly reaffirmed. If John and Nancy Hutchings are not permitted to recover the income loss they sustained because Mr. Hutchings stayed home to care for his injured wife who suffered a permanent brain injury, then they will not have been made whole for the injuries that directly result from the tortfeasor's negligence.
Mr. Elliott, doesn't it depend on whether we look at what you're seeking as part of the consortium claim of Mr. Elliott or as part of the compensation due to Mrs. Elliott?
The Hutchings, Your Honor, but I agree with you. That's okay, Your Honor. I do agree with you, and if I could give you some procedural history as to how we get to that issue in this case. The income loss evidence was presented at the trial court without any objection, and it was unopposed. Just before closing arguments, as we had were finalizing jury instructions, the objection was made for the first time. We asked that this evidence be submitted as part of each of the plaintiff's claim, either Mr. Hutchings' claim for loss of consortium or Mrs. Hutchings' personal injury claim. And that is clear from both the jury instructions that we submitted. I made it clear on the record at page 454 of the trial transcript, and it is also clear in the judgment entry following the trial that the court had denied us this issue. Now, Your Honor, I would submit, having had a chance to look at this issue further, that I would submit that it is part of Nancy Hutchings' personal injury claim and not part of John Hutchings' loss of consortium claim.
Let me just stop you there, if I could, just for a clarification. If the Hutchings had hired a nursing service to care for Mrs. Hutchings, no question she needed care, is there any question that would have been a part of her claim?
It would have, Your Honor, and that goes directly to my second point. In the state of Ohio, those expenses clearly would be recoverable. The Fifth District's decision in this case, therefore, puts spouses and families in a very difficult dilemma. The dilemma being, if your wife, as in this case, has suffered a severe and permanent brain injury, either go out and hire somebody to come in and take care of her and recover those costs, or stay there and take care of her yourself, as Mr. Hutchings' preference was, and risk the fact that you're not going to be reimbursed for the significant income losses they've suffered.
Well, counsel, isn't the distinction here that the nursing services or custodial care services are one thing, and to speculate on the loss of income, which is a different measurement than what it cost on an hourly basis for a home health provider, is a totally different measure of damages. And the courts routinely, and I don't think we're in any dispute, that the professional services of a home health care provider are measurable and acceptable and awardable, whereas we have this nebulous area of lost income for a spouse that, which, you know, it, here he was a financial planner and had his own business, and there's a gray area of what his loss would be.
Well, yeah, that's correct, Your Honor. I would submit to Your Honor that in this particular case, there wasn't a gray area. The testimony was, again, unopposed from an economic expert in our case. But your point's a good one, and I would suggest, Your Honor, that if the family, in fact, hires in-home health care, that's a very measurable way to prove those damages. If, however, the spouse, as I think many spouses ought to, elects to come home and care for their injured spouse, then I would suggest, Your Honor, that saying that we're only going to compensate you for the estimate of what it would have cost to bring somebody else in is not a measurement of the actual harm. The actual harm is the income loss that this person sustains by virtue of not being at work and instead being at home taking care of their spouse.
Well, counsel, so we have a high-earning income spouse. It's not self-employed, but, you know, $750,000. And so they decide they're going to take time off and care for their spouse, which is certainly admirable. Are you saying then there's really no limit to the amount, so they could recover the $250,000, $1.2 million, whatever?
That's not what I'm saying, Your Honor, and I would suggest to the court a couple of points. The first being that in this particular case, we did have a high wage earner, and I'm arguing for a rule of law that would apply across the board regardless of financial means. In this particular case, as in any other case, in a personal injury case, there is almost always the defense of mitigation. And in fact, there was in this case as well. And I would submit to Your Honor that if, under your hypothetical scenario there would be a mitigation of damages defense. And if a jury concluded that the high wage earner had somehow decided not to work anymore and just stay at home, the jury would be free to say you're not going to get in that income loss because you have not mitigated your damages. However, if the wage earner, like Mr. Hutchings in this case, who, by the way, was put in a position where he was taking his wife has significant cognitive deficits, memory loss, confusion, he takes care of her daily needs, he cooks her meals, he takes care of the house, and at the same time, he also attempts to earn a living. In a case like that, where Mr. Hutchings' financial planning business has been literally decimated because of this, I would submit that the rule of law should be that the actual loss that they have sustained by virtue of his staying home and taking care of his wife is the income loss that we presented at trial.
Mr. Elliott, I want to take a broader picture, and I think there may be two issues here. The first one is whether or not the claim that you're describing for Mr. Hutchins is properly brought as part of his consortium claim. That's the first area that I see is problematic, because no court decision that I'm aware has ever defined it to include that. The second issue I'd like you to address is, I think, the one Justice Lansinger talked about, that the DePauw claim made it a part of the claimant's, in this case, Mrs. Hutchinson's claim, not the consortium claim. So would you address those two issues for me, please?
Yes, Your Honor. And I would submit, as I in my response to Justice Lansinger, that it is, I would submit that it's more proper in the context of the injured victim's personal injury claim as opposed to a loss of a consortium claim. The loss of consortium claim, I agree with Your Honor, I have found no case that would allow this measure of recovery in the context of a loss of consortium claim. And I do agree that the DePaul versus Bichette case allowed this in the context of the injured spouse's claim. And the reason for that is the whole concept that in the state of Ohio, we don't distinguish between who makes the money in the marital relationship. If the wife makes the money, it's part of marital income. If it's the husband that makes the money, it's marital income. And in this particular case, Nancy Hutchings' marital income declined significantly because her spouse had to come into the house. So I believe it's part of the injured victim's.
Well, then do we even have a conflict if the Second District allowed it as part of the claim and the Fifth District disallowed it as part of a consortium claim? Is there even a conflict
there?
Well,
Your Honor, I would submit that I believe there is a conflict. The Fifth District, we argued at the trial court that this was, we argued alternatively that it was either part of Mr. Hutchings' loss of consortium claim or it was part of Nancy Hutchings' personal injury claim. That is made clear in our proposed jury instructions. It's made clear at page 454 of the trial transcript, and it's made clear in the court's judgment entry. So we made both of those arguments at trial. The Fifth District, the court may recall, initially decided that we weren't entitled to these damages because there had been a double recovery, which wasn't the case. We had not submitted evidence of the cost of home health care. We had presented unopposed, unobjected to economic loss testimony. And when we moved for reconsideration and pointed that out to the Fifth District said, oh, you're right, but our decision's the same. We're not going to allow the income loss, which we had obviously made as a part of Mrs. Hutchings' claim. So I do believe, Your Honor, there is a direct conflict here.
If we were to agree with you and find as a matter of law that this is a economic loss on the injured party's side and fashion some rule of mitigation to deal with the issue of the high wage earner. What happens to this case? Does this case go back for a retrial? Because there's a lot of dispute in the record when you read the other side's brief factually about what he earned and earned before and what his real loss of income. Maybe they didn't dispute it as trial, but does it go back for a retrial or is it something we determine on the facts up here?
Your Honor, I believe it would have to be remanded for a trial simply on the issue of what the economic loss was. That evidence was obviously presented at the trial court, but because the court didn't allow that as part of the jury instructions, I believe that the defense would be able to argue these concepts of mitigation, so I think it'd have to go back. And I know I'm running short on my time, and I want to preserve some time for rebuttal, but I'd say, finally, that I have looked at all the cases I can on this issue, not only from the state of Ohio, for which there are few, but around the country. And I have seen no case that provides sound logic for denying injury victims the types of losses that we're requesting here. We are just asking that this court fashion a rule of law that preserves and maintains the very sound legal principle that injured victims be made whole. Nancy Hutchings and John Hutchings have not been made whole here. And that's the relief we are requesting.
Thank you, Mr. Elliott. Mr. Norman.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court, my name is Scott Norman. I represent Mr. David Childress and Central Ohio Paintball. As brought up by this court, I do not believe a conflict exists. The Second District decision in DePaul indicates that the injured party is allowed to make the claim for her spouse's lost wages. In this particular case, the claimants are attempting to make a claim under what would be classified as a consortium claim. A consortium claim has historically been listed as non-economic damages, loss of society, services, conjugal affection, and sexual relations.
But they maintain they brought it in the alternative. What's your response to that?
Your Honor, in this particular case, Mr. Hutchings originally presented his own personal injury claim. An economist, Dr. Burke, was called to testify at trial in this case, and he gave lengthy, detailed testimony about the alleged losses of economic loss to Nancy Hutchings as far as wages, Mr. Hutchings as far as wages, and detailed analysis of what her loss of services were to the household and put an economic value. At no point in time did Dr. Burke testify as to what her home nursing needs were or what the cost of that would be, even though he was called to testify at trial and could have done so. I'd take it one step further.
That be an issue of mitigation if they were trying to allege that his loss of earnings could be imputed to her as a matter of damage. Wouldn't you then have the obligation to come in and say, well, it should have been limited to what they could have hired home health care for to mitigate?
Absolutely. And in fact, we had argued for an instruction on mitigation for the court, and it was denied by the trial court. But I'll take it one step further, Your Honor, as to whether or not they can be entitled to home nursing, because I believe you have to have proof that she, in fact, needs nursing services. There were three doctors called on behalf of the plaintiff at the time of trial. Dr. Friedenberg, who is a neurologist, Dr. McClure, an internal medicine specialist, and Dr. Cook, who is a neuropsychologist. And there wasn't a single shred of testimony that said Nancy Hutchings required home nursing care or there was a need for care. Without that opinion testimony, I don't know how you make the leap of faith to then submit to the jury that you actually have to and would be required to have home nursing care.
Well, counsel, wasn't there considerable testimony about the things that she could and could not do for herself?
There were, Your Honor.
Okay. But you maintain that none of that is compensable by a jury unless you have a doctor testify as to the need for a nurse in particular.
Well, if we look at it this way, Your Honor, she was able to stay home by herself. And the testimony at the trial level revealed that Mr. Hutchings would go home at lunchtime, and then he would go home in the evenings, and he was the one who was then taking care of the cooking and the cleaning and those items. And there was significant testimony by Dr. Burke about those services, which is her inability to cook, her inability to clean. She was still able to drive, still retained a license, still for a period of time worked following this collision. And absent testimony that, at least from our position, Your Honor, that says she needs nursing care or it's required for her because of her condition, if you send that to the jury, we believe that would be pure speculation.
You said that you requested a charge or an instruction with respect to mitigation, and that was denied. It wouldn't seem you would be entitled to such an instruction if the judge is not letting the jury consider the claim in the first place. I mean, why would you be able to throw a mitigation charge into the jury when the judge has ruled out this is an economic part of her loss?
The mitigation charge at that stage we had requested, Your Honor, was as it related to Mrs. Hutchings' lost wages claims and some of the other claims at trial, not as it relates to Mr. Hutchings' lost wage claim. I would like the court to understand.
Why would you bring that up? That doesn't have anything to do with what we're talking about today, does it?
So I brought it up, Your Honor, because we have been talking about the potential for mitigation. Okay. Should this get remanded back to the trial court?
Let me ask you, before we get bogged down more on the facts of this case, I like your view on whether the law that we write in this case should support spouses assisting each other, one or the other, when one is injured, or should the law say, go get a nurse or a nursing service? That's the issue, isn't it, before us? Take away the fact. We may decide the legal issue, and you may win on the facts, but the important, very important legal issue here, it seems to me, upon which we have two courts of appeals have a different view. The Second District Court seems to be saying that there is some value in having a spouse help his or her spouse recover or manage herself when she has a serious injury. Let's assume that the person needs assistance, and I know that's in dispute here. But what's your view on the policy issue, whether we should say that evidence in the right case, evidence should be permitted to to show loss of earnings by a spouse who gives up his or her earnings to help the other spouse heal or function with their disability?
It's a difficult question to answer, Your Honor. I believe it's certainly admirable, and I would hope that we would all want to and would expect to take care of our spouse. And if we look at the cases that have been placed before this court, and especially if we look at DePauw, one of the things the court considered was the duration of the care being offered by the husband. And in that particular case, the court focused on the fact that it was a 12-day time period. They went on to say it was a small period of time, a brief period of time. In all of our review of the cases, the longest period of time was where the wife had taken 5 days off from work and a 4-month leave of absence from work. This is a completely different scenario. The claims alleged by Mr. Hutchings are not for a week or 10 days or for 4 months. These are for the remainder of the claimant's, his wife's, lifetime. And if we look to the history, Mr. Hutchings, this accident was in January of 1999. Mr. Hutchings did not sustain any wage loss in 1999, 2000, or 2001. And this was testified by Dr. Burke at page 281 of the record.
Okay, let me stop you there, because this arbitrary time limit seems to me to be somewhat suspect. If the evidence is that the injured person is going to need nursing care, some kind of outside care, indefinitely, why should that make a difference on the principle of law?
As to whether
whether the spouse does the assisting or whether they're forced to hire a nursing care service.
I'm not submitting to the court that there can be any bright line. If we look at a standard and what the majority of you has held, it has consistently held and looked at the reasonable cost of nursing services. And if we talk, and it was brought up previously, about the level of income, and in this particular case, we're talking about the level of a high earner, I think you then have to weigh the balances of the plaintiff's claims along with what is reasonable and what should be expected a defendant to be charged if ultimately this is an issue for the jury.
I suppose the recovery could be limited to the cost of nursing services, couldn't it?
Absolutely, Your Honor, and that is an issue that we believe Nancy Hutchings could have brought and proceeded and pursued under her own claim. She chose not to. There was no claim, there was no evidence put forth by Dr. Burke that she was going to be required or what the cost of those nursing services would be.
But counsel, the appellants here don't want the cost of nursing services. What they're saying is that there's a benefit to both spouses to have this spouse provide the services. And that's their choice. And the loss of wages that flow from that is what they're asking for compensation for. Are you saying that any rule that we establish would have to ignore the allegation of an intangible benefit, so to speak, of spouses caring for one another and strictly be limited to what the going rate is for home health care aid, or say you had the need for a skilled nursing and one of the spouses was a skilled nurse and they kept them in the home as opposed to, you know, outside the home and provided that skilled nursing in the home. Would that preclude that spouse from recovering that?
As far as the value of the service, no. But I'd like to also step back to what the court mentioned, which was an intangible, that it's the spouse who's there and the spouse who is helping. And in this particular case, Mr. Hutchings did in fact present a consortium claim where he talked about being there for his wife and the impact on the marriage and the impact of what they had. In fact, the jury did award him a consortium claim and an award for the loss in services, affection, society, and those issues with his wife. So that was what we would classify to be the non-economic claims by Mr. Hutchings.
So it couldn't be figured in the test, for example, that if we do come up with one, that's totally separate.
I think, as history has told us, they are separate claims. And as the case law and all the history has shown us, those claims, which should be for the care, are for the injured party, not as an item classified and incorporated as part of a consortium claim.
So then back to my original question, you would then use the going rate or the standard of the industry for the level of care that is necessary, depending on what that level of care it might be.
I believe that's what we'd ask the court to apply,
and
absolutely.
That is truly only should be claimed by the injured party, the Mrs. Hutchinson here, in her measure of damages.
That's correct. And that brings up a point that I believe was previously addressed, which was what would happen if we remanded this case? Well, the only remaining case is that of John Hutchings. The matter of the case of Nancy Hutchings has been resolved and is fully and finally completed. So if this case is remanded specifically to the Court of Appeals, the only remaining plaintiff would be John Hutchings. And that would mean the only potential recovery would be under a consortium claim, not under the quote-unquote injured party claim, as the courts have continually held.
Well, now why would that be if they offered the evidence of his loss of earnings in her claim, or offered them alternatively, and if this court should say that that is a valid loss that's recoverable, why would that not be available in her claim?
The status of this case at this time, Your Honor, is that judgment has been completely satisfied as to Nancy Hutchings. The only open and remaining judgment that has not been satisfied is that of John Hutchings.
So the only issue appealed is his claim and not her claim? Is that what you're...
That is correct, Your Honor. He is the only
That's
remaining...
That's not the proposition of law we accepted, though. We said spouses should be able to recover the income loss due to one spouse caring for an injured spouse and should not be limited to the cost to hire home health care. And it's argued then in the alternative, and it's not his appeal and it's not her appeal. In fact, they refer repeatedly throughout the complaint as appellant Nancy Hutchins. You continue to maintain that they never claimed anything in her case, and they keep claiming it was in the alternative. Where will we find in the record support for your argument that they didn't raise it in hers?
Your Honor, if we look at the record of Dr. John Burke, there is no testimony by Dr. Burke as to what the...
So your argument is basically an evidentiary argument.
Correct.
You are ignoring the legal arguments that they make and saying because they didn't present testimony that tied it to it, they don't have any support for their legal argument. That's what you're claiming?
Correct. And then we went to do the instructions with the court. We had asked the trial court to not allow Mr. Hutchings to be able to make a wage claim for taking care of his wife, and that's when... In fact, the trial court refused to instruct, and the Fifth District, in fact, upheld that, Your
Honor.
Did
they request an instruction that it be allowed in her claim as a loss?
I don't have a specific recollection of that from the record, Your Honor.
And this really isn't necessarily a claim that they're making for nursing care or substitute for nursing care or avoiding nursing care. As I understand it, the claim is more of a, it may be home health or it may be what's often referred to as chore care or, you know, some assistance in the home, not necessarily medical care. Is that correct?
That would be accurate, Your Honor. Nothing further, Your Honor. We would ask that the court uphold the Fifth District, indicate there was no conflict. I appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Norman. Mr. Elliott, you've saved a minute and a half of your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chief Justice. This issue was appealed on behalf of both plaintiffs. And again, in the trial court's judgment entry, it clearly says that the trial court refused to instruct on plaintiff's claims for the lost income that had been sustained by Mr. Hutchings staying at home. Your Honor, the mitigation defense was not presented at trial precisely for the reason you noted. We told the trial court that if you're not going to give us an instruction on income loss, then there's no purpose for a mitigation instruction, and the Court of Appeals agreed with that conclusion by the trial court. I would submit again that a conflict does exist and that we do need a rule of law that gives us some certainty on what we're entitled to recover in the trial courts. And I would submit, Your Honors, not to necessarily throw out, if you do fashion a rule of law that says these economic losses are recoverable, because again, they are the actual losses that this family has suffered, but not to necessarily throw out the cost to hire in-home health care. For instance, there may be a circumstance, as some of the cases have indicated, where a mother or a father stays home to take care of a child. In those circumstances, that certainly would be warranted. And I would argue that in a case where you have a spouse who's not employed and hasn't suffered income loss, that that be the proper measure of damages as well. So we would ask the court to fashion a rule of law that allows the recovery of these economic losses. It is a sound argument. It makes absolute sense. It preserves the make-whole doctrine, and it promotes the very strong interests we have in the family and the marital relationship in the state of Ohio. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.